You're listening to Ask a Black Doctor, Friday Facts About COVID-19 featuring Dr. Bukasi Dubé. Join us every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. for a half an hour as we discuss issues surrounding the current pandemic, vaccines and distribution, dispel myths, provide facts, and address concerns. We'll also be providing updates about COVID-19 vaccines and discuss how we can build a better culture around Black health. Episodes will be available wherever you listen to podcasts, so head on over to thenumbers.fm for the link to the show. Now let's jump into it. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. This is Ask a Black Doctor with Dr. Bukasi Dubé. This is our second episode. Really excited to be here again. So grateful for the opportunity to provide accurate, current information to our community. Last week, we spoke about hospitalization in the Black community. And this week, episode two, we'll be talking about Black men and the COVID-19 vaccine. How you doing this morning, Doc?
Hey, I'm doing well, doing well. Thank you for having me, and thank you for tuning in, people out there.
Absolutely. So let's talk about it. Black men and the COVID-19 vaccine. I am a Black man. Do I have any fears about the vaccine myself? Initially, I definitely did, and we spoke about that last week with regards to people being concerned about how quickly, you know, the vaccine was created and you know, just all the multiple conspiracy theories that are out there. Are there any additional concerns that you've been hearing lately, specifically from the Black community, Black men?
Well, the main thing is always that we hear over and over again is always about, you know, the speed at which these vaccines were created. And, you know, people bring up systemic racism, right, when it comes to, you know, the experiments that have been done on Black folks. And then you also hear about, you know, things that are happening even to this day, right? You have Dr. Susan Moore in Indiana, who's physician herself, who ended up dying in a hospital where she worked because of not being given the care that she needed as a Black. And she felt that, you know, she got poor care because she was Black. Mm-hmm. And had she been white, she would have gotten better care and maybe survived. So you hear those things over and over again. And so the honest truth is we try to reassure people that, yes, there is systemic racism and there is racism on an individual level. Mm-hmm. However, these vaccines are still safe. Just like we talked about last week, you know, we have Dr. Kizmakia Corbett, who's African-American, who led the Moderna team in developing the Moderna vaccine. And you have Dr. Tatenda Shupera, who's an African-American male, who led the Pfizer team in developing the vaccine. So you have people that look like you and I participating in the development. So they work, and they work really, really well. So we should have confidence that we should have confidence in taking these vaccines.
Have there been any side effects that are limited within certain racial groups? Like, are there not just, you know, conspiracy theories and just, you know, the urban myths, but I guess, yeah, to kind of, you know, answer those questions, have there been any side effects that just affect Black men?
So we have not seen any side effects that are limited to Black men only. Mm-hmm. So not a single one. You may have heard about the myocarditis, inflammation of the heart, that it's the new thing that everybody's talking about this week. Mm-hmm. It's primarily in young white males, ages 14 to about 21. And we haven't seen that in black folks.
So when we're talking about situations like that that are specific to race, how frequently is there intersection between pre-existing conditions that may already be prevalent within our community?
So I should take a step back and say that it's not necessarily linked to race. It's just that we've seen the signal in this particular group. So when we talk about pre-existing conditions, man, that's a topic for an entire year, right?
Right.
pre-existing conditions come about for many reasons. In Black folks, we know that pre-existing conditions exist in part because of, actually to a large extent, because of chronic stress syndrome. What is chronic stress? Chronic stress is living in an environment that's stressful to you that leads to all these hormones, the cortisone, the epinephrine, and the IGF being significantly elevated, being high all the time. They're not supposed to be high all the time, right? Because those are stress hormones. And they cause your body to respond in certain ways, producing too much sugar, leading to diabetes, producing, you know, causing your arteries to harden, which we call atherosclerosis. Mm. And if it happens in the heart, it leads to heart attacks. If it happens in the brain, it leads to strokes. If it happens in anywhere else, everywhere else, it causes high blood pressure. It causes kidney failure. And by the way, high blood pressure also leads to, you know, heart attacks and strokes. Right. And it causes obesity. And so these are the pre-existing conditions that lead to people being sicker when they get COVID-19 or people die COVID-19. And that's why we're seeing that if you age adjust all the data that we have about COVID-19, we're seeing Black folks and the Latinx community and Pacific Islanders dying at much, much higher rates. Mm. It's because of all these things that have happened in the past, right? And the present, the racism that they live with that leads to this chronic stress syndrome.
So can chronic stress syndrome also cause a specific list of side effects from the vaccine?
Not that we have seen, no.
Okay.
No. Yeah. And we've given, hundreds of millions of these vaccines, right? We've given over 1 billion doses now of these vaccines the world over, and we have not seen that. So it's highly unlikely that this would be the case.
And thank you for the clarification earlier with regards to that situation that's appearing within white male hearts. Now you said the results that we're seeing now, it's not based on race, but could it be linked more to testing? Is that why we're seeing those particular results? Is it because it's based on a specific test group or certain people are getting tested more frequently for different things?
Can you clarify the question?
Oh, I'm sorry. The results? You were talking about the, I don't want to say syndrome, but the thing that's happening with white male hearts right now that you said you're seeing.
Oh, the myocarditis?
Yes.
Yeah, the inflammation of the heart.
Right.
Yes. So what this young white males complain of chest pain maybe 3 to 5 days after getting the second dose of the Pfizer vaccine. And then they get tested. So if you don't complain of chest pain, there's no need to test you for that, right?
Right.
But it's pretty significant chest pain that leads them to complain of the chest pain. It goes away by itself. Some people get steroids, some people get some ibuprofen or something like that, an anti-inflammatory that leads to it going away. But it goes away typically by itself. And I should also note that, though, right, people who get COVID-19 are at much higher risk of developing this inflammation, Black and white.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
basically, so, our relationship with medicine, if we're used to dealing with stress, used to dealing with pain and not being properly cared to, how often are we going to report these things?
Very true. Very true. Right. You know that we all know that a lot of Black folks don't go to the ER because they just don't like interacting with the health system.
Yeah.
Because the health system hasn't treated us well for as long as we've been in this country.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and the health system is not designed for people that look like you and I. That's why we need a radical, we need to radically change healthcare in America. And I think this pandemic offers us a great opportunity to change that.
What are some of the changes that you think, if were to happen, the most immediately would have the greatest impact? Because it's speaking about our relationship to the healthcare system, I have no issue going to the hospital. I remember before moving out here to the West Coast, living right outside of Philadelphia, there were certain hospitals you avoided because you knew the care was going to be poor. So there were certain hospitals, like, you don't go to Crozier because you will be in the triage emergency room, waiting room for 8 hours. You go, you know, you travel another 10 minutes and you go to Riddle Hospital where they get you right in and you get immediate care.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard of those things even here in Portland, that there's some hospitals, if you're a person of color, you want to avoid, which is quite unfortunate. And it has to do in part because people don't treat you well, right?
Yeah.
You are disrespected. It's this slight lack of courtesies that you encounter that you wouldn't encounter otherwise, right? If you were white. So those things spread in the community. People, you know, people start saying, oh, you know, don't go to this place. So what are some of the changes? We could start treating each other like human beings, right? Recognize that Black folks are human beings, just like white folks. Yeah. So simple stuff like that. And ensuring that if someone is complaining of pain, you take that pain seriously. I mean, there are studies that have been done at UCLA and at Mayo Clinic that showed that if you were, the first one that was done was, I think it was in the Hispanic community at UCLA, and then the same doctor moved to Mayo Clinic in Arizona, in Scottsdale, Arizona, and he repeated the study and found that it was the same with Black folks as well. If they complained, if they came in with documented, you know, long bone fractures, documented long bone fractures. I'm not talking about a perception of, oh yeah, my arm hurts.
Right.
Where they see that there is a fracture, a long bone fracture, Black folks got, and Latinx folks got pain medication much, much later on than white folks.
Man.
So simple stuff like that needs to change within healthcare.
Yeah. We need to feel like we're heard, because I know from having, you know, people in my family that are in the medical profession and just having, I guess, what I would consider a healthy respect for that work. When you go into these hospitals and you go into the doctor's office, you want to think that the people that you are interacting with are looking at you and are listening to you with the same level of respect that you're giving them. So I do remember being in a doctor's office, and I was dealing with the nurse before the doctor came in. My doctor came in, and I was complaining about pain, abdominal pain. I was there for something else, and the nurse was like, was there anything else you're dealing with? I'm like, yeah, as a matter of fact, I've got this reoccurring abdominal pain. And she was like, okay. And made no mention of it to the doctor, and her dismissal of it put me in a place where I dismissed it. You know, and again, that is kind of typical for us Black men. We take the licks and keep on going. Any person of color in our community, that's kind of what we've been made to do. Not having some of the grace extended to us and just not being believed. So it's like, if this professional is telling me and shrugging it off, it's no big deal, then hey, maybe it's no big deal.
Yeah, and that's really sad, right? Because it's a lack of respect of your personhood, of your individualness. And that's why we see cases like Dr. Susan Moore in Indiana dying, because she's been completely dismissed when she's saying, "I can't breathe. You know, I need oxygen. I'm having lots of pain."
Right.
And it's been dismissed. Now, can you imagine if a physician who is a patient is being dismissed that way? What more of people who cannot advocate for themselves?
Right.
What more of people who maybe not cannot, but don't have the willpower to keep on pushing? If the medical system is dismissing you, you just, you know, cower back and just say, okay, all right, I guess it's not a big deal, because they don't think it's a big deal.
Yeah. To have, I mean, in the other angle for me, because she's a physician, not only does she have the knowledge of her body and what's actually happening, but she has the proper verbiage to communicate.
Very true. I'm saying?
Like she's speaking in code to other physicians and other healthcare providers. Hey, these are the things I need you to look at because this is what I'm feeling.
Yeah. Man, it's sad. It is very, very sad. And I think ultimately it boils this plea, this demand that, hey, we are people too.
Right.
Treat us as human beings.
So, talking about the vaccine some more, let's discuss like physical activity. What should we be aware of? Is it like people that already have different routines of, you know, maybe walking, biking, hitting the gym? What are some of the things we should be concerned about when we're in between, you know, the first or second dose of the vaccine? Or as we're, you know, as we're in the year?
So that's a very good question. I think, so I can tell you in my situation, right? I got my first dose, I did just fine. It's as though nothing ever happened. And I went about my day. I went to the gym that day. I went to the gym the next day. The main thing is just do whatever you normally do. Don't break your routine because you got the vaccine. At times after the second dose, some people feel, you know, a little fatigued. They may have a little bit of a fever. Just get the rest that you need. If you need to take a Tylenol and ibuprofen after the second dose, go ahead and do so. I have a daughter that's in high school. After her second dose, she felt a little tired and had chills. And yeah, we gave her some Tylenol, and she's doing just fine. Mm. But just go about your day. If you need the extra rest, make sure you get the extra rest.
Got you. Is this a situation where people should be looking to become more active to kind of counteract any of the effects of the vaccine or even COVID?
Man, being across the board, if you work out, if you get some sort of exercise, you will feel better. Mm. That's why all, you know, societies, medical societies, including the American Heart Association and all those societies, they recommend daily exercise for that reason. Because if you exercise, you're more likely to lose weight, you're more likely to feel good, and mentally it's stimulating as well, right? I'm sure you've heard about, you know, the high that you get from running, or from exerting yourself a lot. It's the endorphins that are released that give you that high. And so exercise is good for you. And by exercise, right, I'm not talking about, you know, go out and run a marathon tomorrow. No. Right? So what I'm talking about is start walking every day. If you've never done this, start off by doing 20 minutes a day.
Right.
And after about 2 weeks, 3 weeks, double that time. And up to a point where you're walking in about an hour a day, and it's brisk walking. But don't try to overexert yourself, because, hey, when you do that, one, you're going to get the soreness, you know, the muscle soreness that a lot of people are like, shoot, I'm never going to go back to the gym because my muscles hurt like there's no tomorrow.
There was a time when I was working out 3 days a week for about 45 minutes. There were these early morning sessions, like 5:30 a.m. sessions. And I'd get home and my instructor was like, you got to hop in the ice bath. And that became my routine too. So I want to reestablish my relationship with working out and exercise. So there's been a lot of talk this week about, you know, the mask mandate and people getting their vaccinations and moving around with their cards and using their cards to be able to access certain businesses and retail establishments without having to wear a mask. Before I jump into the question, I want to thank you for the information you gave me last week. It allowed me to have a much more informed conversation around mutations. So we're talking about people wanting to be around each other without masks because they've been vaccinated. I am still kind of leery about that. My fear is primarily based in people being dishonest about whether they've been vaccinated or not, just in a effort to not have to wear masks, because there was already such a significant pushback against wearing masks. Something as simple as just let's be good to each other. Let's protect each other. As someone who's vaccinated, how, you know, have you heard like additional, like, you know, concerns like this where people are like, well, I'm vaccinated, but I'm still going to keep my mask on?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I've heard a lot of people say that. I, for the most part, still wear my mask around, in part because it's just setting a good example for others, right? We're still not out of this pandemic, and we still don't have, we haven't hit that magic number yet, which mm-hmm. is, or the community immunity, whatever, whichever term you like to use. Yeah. So I heard a good analogy recently by a physician who I'm going to ask to be a guest on this show at some point, Dr. Don Spike. He said that you can, whenever you use the bathroom, right, you have the choice to not wash your hands, right? And you'd probably be fine if you didn't wash your hands after using the bathroom, right? But it's a risk you're taking. It's a risk that you could potentially spread disease, right? The reason we wash our hands after using the bathroom is because there are some bacteria that that you want to make sure that you're not passing off to other people, that you're not taking into into your mouth if you're to go and eat after using the bathroom, right? So for a lot of people could get away with not washing their hands, but why would you take that risk? And it's the same thing with masks, right? You can probably get vaccinated, you'll probably be fine if you didn't walk around with your mask. You'd probably do just okay, even get sick and never pass the disease around, but why take the risk?
That's a lot of, yeah, the majority of the sentences you just said had probably in it. That's too many probablys for me. Way too many probablys for me. Herd immunity a little bit. How close are we to herd immunity?
So as a country, we're not there yet. I mean, it'll be a while. We need maybe another 2 months or so if people get vaccinated. In Oregon, we are inching closer and closer. I think we're vaccinated close to about 60% having received at least their first dose, and a little over 50% having received having completed their two dose series or gotten the one shot Johnson & Johnson. Mm-hmm. So that's why until such a point we reach the herd immunity, we still need to be masking, right? We still need to be, you know, practicing good hand hygiene, practicing good physical distancing, avoiding large crowds, and trying to limit travel as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Once we...
Oh.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was also going to say that there are two maybe game changers, right? One being the CDC and OHA coming out and saying that if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask indoors and outdoors. And so that's led to a slight increase in vaccine uptake. Then the second thing, the governor's announcement last week about the lottery, right? If you're vaccinated, you get entered into the $1 million lottery, and then you also get entered in the county lottery, which is $10,000. So that's before us, like Ohio, New Jersey, New York, they saw an increase in vaccine uptake after those initiatives. So we're hoping that we'll see a similar uptake. We're hoping that we'll see a similar uptake here in Oregon.
So with some of the, when I first heard about those initiatives, I was like, oh, wow, okay. Hey, whatever works to get people out. And I'm glad that it's actually working, that people are more encouraged for whatever reason. Get more vaccines.
I was actually talking to, we did a session with Barbara's in the Portland Metro this past Monday, and they were very suspicious. They're like, man, you're paying us to get the vaccine? Something is wrong here. Has the federal government ever incentivized us to do stuff like that? Like, I don't trust this because of that. And, you know, I had to explain that, you know, no, everybody gets in the lottery. It's not just Black folks, it's everybody. And as you probably saw earlier today, that the lady who won the first drawing in Ohio is a white lady who won the million for getting vaccinated. It's a great opportunity.
It is.
Give me $1 million, I'm happy, right?
Yeah, very, very. Yeah, I don't have to pay for. Sure.
Get that shot and get your $1 million.
Yeah.
Get a chance to win $1 million.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So I'm glad it's actually working. Once we do hit that number for herd immunity, how different is life going to be for us? Because I feel like we're already rolling back a lot of the quarantine guidelines to the point that we're already opening back up. So how are there any other, like, what else is going to change once we receive herd immunity as far as how we relate to each other and move as a society?
So some of the restrictions are being rolled back, right? But we're still not at pre-pandemic levels, right?
Okay.
Movie theaters are not operating at 100%. Blazer games are not operating with 100% fans.
Right.
And you name it, all segments of society are operating at limited capacity. So they will come at, when we reach herd immunity, we can then open up and say, hey, you know, Blazers, let's go, let's take on, who are we playing right now in the
Nuggets.
Inflated Nuggets. Yeah, let's take on the Nuggets with a full stadium, right? And
yeah.
So I'm just using the Blazers as an example.
Of course.
But that's what will happen. We can go back to doing things the way we did them. DMV, you won't need a 3 week you won't need an appointment.
Three weeks
in advance. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, this was great. Thank you so much, Dr. Dubey. I'm looking forward to us getting together again next week. Listeners, please, if you have any additional questions that weren't answered in this episode or any of the previous episodes, you can head on over to thenumbers.fm. There is a little questionnaire slot below the podcast, and you can post some questions there.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor, airing every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. right here on The Numbers. If you missed it, you can find the link to the full episodes on our website at thenumbers.fm. You can also subscribe to the podcast on all streaming platforms. Be sure to rate and leave a comment. If you have questions you'd like answered on future episodes, you can submit them through our website or the link in our bio on Instagram and Twitter.